With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Overserved with myself, Pooch, and my co-host, Rachel. And hopping right back into it, yes, it was a few weeks ago, but one of my favorite stories, just an interesting headline, was Rublev in the Shanghai Open Finals against Hurkacz. Obviously, it was a hell of a match going three sets, but more importantly than that, we saw a Rublev on-court moment, kind of him losing his cool, which I love because I love when the players show emotion. Kind of just wanted to get us, that's your guy, one of your favorite players, get your sense on the situation.
Yeah, no, I mean, we know Rublev off the court is such a nice guy and just very respectful and humble and kind, and on court, he is just shows every emotion possible, just wears his heart on his sleeve. I guess he let a photographer walking through the crowd, I guess, get to him. That can be frustrating for the players for sure. But yeah, seeing him just kind of explode like that was not fun to watch. I don't like when he gets angry and bangs his knee. It's not fun. It looks like it hurts. Hubie, on the other hand, is very even keeled. And, you know, I think that really kind of kept him through that match. He is someone to never count out. He won the Miami 1000 a couple years ago and then just won this one big tournament. And so it was tough to see his emotions get the best of
That's one of the one things with Rublev, because we all see the interviews with Tennis Channel where he's kind of soft-spoken, especially when he's speaking English. And he's very quiet with like a small chuckle, but like just seems like just a quiet, shyer type of dude. And then you see on court, obviously that happened. The cameraman ran in front. It was a big, you know, obviously a pressure moment. Big point, a lot going on. And Rublev, the big debate was Rublev was never getting to the ball that was hit on that particular point. But I just find it like, I find only him would stop the match and kind of just lose it on that guy for 2 minutes. Imagine being that guy too. Imagine just sitting, would just be like I don't even know what to do. He had to feel just, I mean, in a sense, just real stupid. And, you know, not Rublev, but that cameraman at that time, just getting belittled and being just like
yeah, I would have didn't mean it.
Yeah, but yeah, I would have been gone. I would have been
just
gone.
Just peaced out.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, nothing was going to happen. But if I was that cameraman, I just would have been like so scared. And I don't even know why. You just would have felt stupid.
It's like the U.S. Open where like the line judges call out the people that aren't at their seat.
Yeah.
And they'll literally call them out and the camera will go to them. It's like that, but a player calling you out, which is a different kind of just attention and experience.
The thing you said is Hubie is once again like another very soft-spoken type of guy that tries not to show too much emotion. And during this whole thing, he's kind of just standing there like just and obviously he's huge. It's a huge human being standing as Rublev's just losing his mind on this photographer. So definitely, I mean, it was a hell of a match, an interesting moment. But I thought it was a good way to start this episode talking about it, since Rublev is one of your favorite players. But the hopping in now, obviously this past weekend, we saw Ben Shelton win his first ATP title, huge win, hell of a tournament. It was one of those things where same thing with Coco Gauff, won her first 500 over the summer. It was one of those things where you just, It's like almost because they play so well and you expect so much from them. You're kind of surprised that this is the first one, which is crazy when he's so young and such a good player.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Shelton is the hottest player on tour right now. He's got so much momentum coming off that U.S. Open. I mean, I want to say it's not surprising that he just won this tournament and in the fashion that he did. He is just killing it right now. Not only on the court, but off the court. He's just becoming this huge popular player. He's becoming a household name. And it's so fun to watch. So really, really happy that he got that title. I think he's got many more ahead of him. I think that, you know, if he had this breakout earlier in the year, he'd be in the race for the year-end finals. Mm-hmm. And I think he would have a really, really good shot of winning it. That's how good he's playing. That's how, you know, nothing's in his way right now. That's how great he's playing. And, Yeah. So, I mean, I think that he's got so much ahead of him. Obviously a tough first round in Vienna. It wasn't fun to see Yannick facing Ben, the 2 seed versus Ben first round. And then also Medvedev versus Arthur, who made it to the finals in Antwerp, who also had that, you know, breakout kind of a tournament himself. Seeing them face the 1 and 2 seed was a little bit of a buzzkill, but I mean, I'm brushing it off. He literally had no time to recover from Tokyo to Vienna. I think that Ben is just, he's on fire right now. And
that's the thing. He's playing a ton of tennis. Like he's playing, and obviously he's a young kid. He has all that energy. I'm sure he's ready to go. But same thing in the semifinals against Marcus Gairon. He was down a set and 2 breaks. And it was something where you're like, okay, I was watching it. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning on Friday or Saturday night. And I'm just like, oh, you know, expect it. He's probably tired, whatever. Next thing you know, I keep watching, breaks back once, breaks back twice, wins the set, goes to a third set, ends up winning it. But you have to think that plus the final, plus, like you said, flying to Vienna, he just has to be shot. So it was expected. And he still put up a good fight. Obviously he beat Sinner a few weeks ago. So this was their rematch, highly anticipated, but obviously, I mean, for everything that he had going on, he put up a good fight, but Sinner won in 2 sets. And it was, I mean, like you said, just a real tough draw for him.
Yeah, totally. But that Vienna draw is just stacked. We were just talking about that 500. I mean, so many great players. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like, it's, I mean, the level of competition is 1,000 level, you know, I mean, besides Alcaraz or, you know, yeah, exactly. Or Djokovic. And we'll speak about too, obviously, Alcaraz. They were trying to get there, but kind of what he was asking for price-wise at that time. You get it now. He's one of those guys, top-notch, top of the sport. So it's kind of just his asking price at this point. But I like the decision of the commissioner of the Vienna Open, who decided to have a deeper draw and kind of spread that money out a little bit, some different high-key players instead of just, you know, 1 or 2 real high-level guys. But yeah, it's a hell of a draw.
Yeah, like you mentioned, that Alcaraz appearance fee, $750,000 appearance fee. Look, I feel like he earned it. He did. I mean, he's a great player. You know, everyone wants to watch him play. If that's the price that he feels is his appearance fee, I think it's good that he did that. But you're right. I do like that decision as well of the tournament to get these other players, other very competitive, great players, high-ranked players, playing in this tournament. And the draw's been super stacked. I mean, that first round, there were so many popcorn matches. Yeah. And a lot of these players are standing out. I personally think that Yannick, who I spoke about with Ben, I think he's going to make it very far, if not win the tournament. He was serving something, I think 80% of first serves were in against Ben. So I think he's playing really well. He's had a great half of the year. This half of the year has been really good for him. And I think he's really kind of found his placement on tour. And I think he's going to do well in this tournament.
Yeah, and I definitely understand the whole appearance fee thing. Because for those who don't know, basically what Alcaraz charges to go into a tournament is basically what Rachel charges us to get on Overserved. So it's basically we have to dig deep in our pockets to get Rachel every week, and we're able to
record
it. So I do get it. And but the one thing is I don't look for alternates. We get it to Rachel and make sure she gets on. Yannick, he's definitely my favorite to take it all. I think he's due. He's been having a great end of the year. I would love to see one of the Americans. I think Tommy Paul's due too. He just, you know, hasn't had the end of the year that he probably would have liked. But yeah. Tommy Paul, Tiafoe, I would like to see them make a deep run. But it's going to be a really good tournament over the next few days.
Yeah, I think all those, the American players, like there's this really, really fun stat that we've got four players in the top 15, four American players in the top 15. You know, it's Tommy, it's Ben, Francis, and Taylor. And aside from Ben, those three guys have had, I guess, not the kind of last few tournaments that they would want. Especially Francis. I think that the season's super, super long. It's really hard to just maintain this high level the whole way through. And that's why you see these, and we're going to get to it soon, this Japanese player at the Tokyo Open, just have like a breakout tournament at the end of the year. And I think that hopefully, you know, they'll get a little bit of a rest, come back very refreshed, and be able to, you know, either go into 2024 or finish off 2023 strong.
Yeah, and you just brought it up, obviously going backtracking to Tokyo real quick. Mochizuki obviously had a really deep run, and it wasn't It wasn't the craziest draw, but it was had some high level competition in it. Obviously, Echeverry, he ended up beating Fritz. So there was a few guys. I mean, he faced high level top 50 guys, even, you know, a few higher. So obviously that had to be a big moment for him, but it just shows, I think tennis is very similar to college basketball in the sense where, A, there's so many games and there's so much going on for like why there's so many upsets. Like it just doesn't happen for in football for teams that play once a week. You know, if a team's ranked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they're not losing. They barely, you know, it's sometimes not competitive with teams from, you know, in the top 5 to, you know, the top 20. And then you have guys in tennis, they play so often and there's so much going on where you have, you know, guys in the 100 sometimes be guys in the top 20, 25. You see it all the time.
Well, I would say that's a really good comparison as far as like they've got such a steady season till the end of the season, and then it's March Madness. Yeah. And then it's the 16 seed beating the 1 seed. And like, so that's where I feel like we're at right now. We're in the March Madness of tennis.
No, I like it. I like it.
That guy, Mochizuki, who you brought up, that was really fun to watch. But I think that also along with like the end of the year, you know, these other players kind of really having their breakout tournaments. I think that another piece to it is there's something to be said about, you know, wild card or a lower ranked player playing in their home, like state and their home country. That's where they have, we've seen a lot of breakout tournaments. I specifically think of this, Tim, I always butcher his last name, Tim van Rijthoven, and he was from the Netherlands. He's from the Netherlands and played in the 250 that was in the Netherlands a couple of years ago. And like, yeah, I, you know, obviously I'd heard of him, but he wasn't ranked. I don't even think he was in the top 200. He wins a tournament. It's like Medvedev beats all these players. And to win the title, we've seen it happen where they're in their home country and they just break out. I don't know if it's just playing in front of their home crowd, if they're inspired, if they're, you know, they've got so much of the support there. But I think that that combined with the year end kind of a thing like him, Mochizuki being able to play in front of his country had to probably make that huge impact.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And that was one of the things when I first got into tennis and the first few tournaments, when you see you start understanding the idea of wild cards and how it works and whatnot, you really, because you would think at least, because sometimes they obviously at these tournaments, they're usually good crowds, but you know, unless it's like the Australian Open, a certain, they're not the most, or you know, a few in Paris or France or some of these different European countries, they're usually not super rowdy. So it's like, I was like, oh, how much like home field advantage can they actually get? You know, when you would think that maybe at first I was like, oh, 1 or 2, but like the first thing, if somebody's going in and watching tennis or like starting to gamble or bet on tennis, you have to understand that these wild cards, they could be ranked 200, 300, 400. If they have friends, family, or, you know, they were a former player who's dropping the rankings, but they're in their home country now, they have a hell of a chance of going deep in that. I don't know what it is, because it's not like, once again, compared to college basketball, like home field advantage, where, you know, if they're playing at Duke or Kentucky and it's just pure craziness, it's not that environment, but the players almost perform like it is. And I don't know what it is, but it really is interesting, the whole concept playing in your home country, hometown, whatever.
No, absolutely. I completely agree with you. But yeah, it is always fun to see a player like that really step into the spotlight, and hopefully we'll see him kind of continue to deliver on tour and take it and run with it.
No, definitely. And then moving on to the women's side, Rachel will be out in Cancun at the WTA finals, which is really exciting. I mean, you get to the point of this year, it's almost in a sense like the championship. So you get to that point where it's the top of the top. Everybody's going to be, you know, the top players going to be there competing against each other day after day. Kind of just wanted to get, you know, what you're looking forward to, who you think has to have a big tournament, who is, you know, your favorite if you have one.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to going to the WTA finals. I've never been. This is in Cancun, and you know, it's obviously the 8 best players of the year, and I, you know, I'm very excited specifically to watch Jessica Pegula. I love her. I think she's definitely one of my favorite players on tour. Also, obviously, Coco. I think that if I had to choose a winner, I would choose her. I think just based on how well she's done this year, and she's definitely a safe bet. Rybakina, my favorite, you know, I can't wait to watch her. Maria Sakkari, she is your girl. She got a little bit lucky. One player couldn't play. She was entered in. I think it's a great opportunity for her to finish out the year strong and just take that confidence that she she just won in Mexico, the 1000. So she's got to feel good coming back to Mexico and competing in the finals. There's also, something worth bringing up, the WTA Elite Trophy Tournament, which is going on right now, the first time in 4 years. So WTA Finals is the top eight player, the best, eight players. And then the WTA Elite Trophy is the next 11 ranked players, plus a wild card of the tournament's choosing. That's going on right now in China. A lot of great players are over there. We've got Donna Vicic, Krejcikova, and a bunch of other players. So I think it's fun that they brought that tournament back. And we've got a couple year end finals taking place.
Definitely. And guys, you're here. So Rachel has never been interested in going to the WTA finals, but as soon as she heard it was in Cancun, the flight was ready to go. All she needed to hear was Cancun, whether there was going to be tennis played or not. Rachel was going to be in Cancun. No, but that's definitely exciting. Like you said, a bunch of, top players. I think it's a real open draw just because I feel like you just see, even in the majors, I feel like it's always a different, it's usually those top women get to the finals, semifinals, but it's usually always a different winner. It's been very hard for one of them to go back to back. So it'll be really interesting. We'll love to see Sabalenka. Pegula, I think, has a lot to prove in the sense where she's been ranked so high, but at the same time, every once in a while, you see her, you struggle against people like Ostapenko, people just hit bigger than her. So I'd like to, obviously, there'll be some big hitters here. So I would like to see her, with a big tournament or Coco. But should be a real few interesting weeks on the women's and men's side.
No, completely agree with you. I think we're going into the end of the year before all of the exhibitions begin, really starting with these finals coming up.
And then going back to the men's side, we haven't seen Novak in a few weeks, at least on court. But he still has been in the headlines, for a good reason, especially right now. If you want to get in and speak about that.
My relationship opinion on Novak Djokovic is right. It's all over the place. Like, I feel like I don't like it, but then I feel like I really like him. Like, he can be such a good guy, but then he can hang up the phone on Ben Shelton and make me really, really mad. There's been a lot of talk about how he's helping a young Serbian player on tour financially. Apparently he's supporting his entire career right now financially. He's even hitting with him, this Hamad Mezhidovic, I think. So he's helping this player. I think that is just incredible. As we all know, it's really, really hard for a player to just even start out and fund their own career. Seeing him support a young fellow countryman player is super, I think it's great and great for the game, and it's great for him, and he's on my good side this week.
There you go. So yeah, I'm sure he's happy about that. And the one thing too,
he does not care.
If Novak, the one thing I have to say about it, Novak, if we're throwing some money around right now, I'm talking college loans, student loans, grad school, I got some bills coming up. if you want to hit two, we could hit backhand, forehand. You can teach me whatever you want to teach me. I'll be your practice buddy if you need. But if not, if we're just throwing a little bit of cash around, definitely make sure I'm somewhere on that list. I don't expect to be like top a billion, but like under somewhere, if you get to Joe Pucherelli on the list, help your boy out. But no, it's great by Novak. He really is professional. The same thing. It's like you love him or you hate him, but then you also find that middle ground where he's one of the greats, he's one of the greats. It makes sense. But good by him, I'm sure. I mean, who knows? Maybe this kid will end up being a real big time player one day. And obviously we'll look back at it and Novak will be a huge reason why. And then finally, getting into the last topic, at least of today, Jensen Brooksby just dropped again. We spoke about it a few months ago, but getting back into it, officially suspended 18 months, which is a huge hit. I mean, to be out of the game 18 months, huge suspension. I just kind of wonder where he goes from here.
Yeah. I mean, it's we've talked about this so many times before, unfortunately, how upsetting it is that these penalties are so extreme and outrageous. We've talked about it. They have to submit their whereabouts for, 3 month periods daily. And he missed, I guess, all three. One of them was a miscommunication between a hotel, and it's just not fair. It isn't. I don't care what anyone says. It's not fair. I think that many different things need to be changed. The PTPA is in place, really working to fix it. 18 months is outrageous. you know, to ban someone from a tour for that long. I mean, at least fine him, and then figure out a way to do the test ASAP. But 18 months of just not letting him do his profession, what's he going to do? Is he going to just train? And, you know, you think even deeper into it, how's he going to make a living for the next 18 months? It's outrageous and it needs to change. It's upsetting. And I really hope that I think he appealed it. I hope that things go his way. But, you know, I think that there needs to be like a lot lighter punishments in this sense.
Yeah, because he, I mean, even if he get that cut in half, 18, 9 months compared to 18 is a huge difference, obviously.
And it's still a lot. Exactly. 9 months is still a lot.
Because 18 is, it just seems like, what do you do exactly financially? What do you do? I mean, Jensen Brooksby might be taking up another career for the next few months, seriously, in the sense where it's just like, how do you keep money coming in? I don't know. Hopefully he's done well enough and has good things to kind of keep doing.
Right. And it'd be different if like he tested negative. That's a different conversation. But he simply didn't take the test. Like he didn't have the test to take. And I think that it just something needs to change there.
And see, and that's the thing. I mean, it's
crazy. Or tested positive, excuse me.
Exactly. Yeah. You expect, because obviously things happen, but at the same time you expect, and I'm sure they get tested a good bit, but what are the chances he does miss three? And obviously things happen. But for the sake, say Jensen was taking something, the one thing he can change, I mean, if he needs a little strength coach, Jensen, put down the stuff. I got you, buddy. We could go do some curls. We could do some lifts. I got you, man. So if that is the case and he needs to get back in the training room without some juice, Jensen, I got you, bro.
I'm so
but I think that's it for this episode of Overserved. Happy to be back. A lot going on, a lot on and off the court the next few weeks. We have the WTA finals, ATP finals coming up. So definitely we'll be hearing a lot from us here at Overserved.
Yeah, thank you guys for watching, and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.